The supermarket giants are in crisis. They're cancelling plans to build new superstores as customers desert them for smaller shops. One of the giants, Tesco, has been caught fiddling its profit figures. And perhaps most importantly, they're being accused of wasting food, underpaying farmers, and exploiting their own staff. In the light of all this, we ask, are the supermarkets past their sell-by date? Supermarkets are a big part of our lives, whether we like it or not. 3 out of 4 grocery items purchased in the UK are bought from just 4 stores: Tesco, Asda, Sainsbury's and Morrison's. Add in some supermarkets with a smaller market share, like Iceland, Lidl and Aldi, and the figure rises to over 80% of all groceries sold coming from just a handful of supermarket giants. For every pound we spend in the shops, more than 52 pence goes on groceries, and most of that goes into the pockets of the supermarkets. But are these huge corporations serving us well?
In February 2013, we decided to launch a campaign that tried to change the way that the world's largest food and beverage companies impact the lives of poor people around the world. We were seeing increasingly that some of the largest companies, even though their consumers wanted them to do more, weren't doing enough. They weren't acting to try to address some of the entrenched poverty and the injustice that was happening in their supply chains, had way too many blind spots on issues to do with gender equality, on land rights, on water rights, on climate change, the way workers are treated. And we thought that they needed to hear more about where they were failing and how they could do better.
Something between a third and a half of all the food produced for our consumption never makes it into the human stomach. That includes 68% of bagged salad, 47% of bakery items, and 40% of apples. The big supermarkets claim this isn't their fault, that it's the customers and food producers who are to blame. But we found out that this is far from the whole truth.
The supermarkets in this country, in the UK and globally, are causing a lot of harms to workers, farmers, consumers, and retailers, small shop retailers. They have destroyed here in the UK small shops, and by the way, jobs in for that matter. We see that the four big supermarkets in the UK are controlling the most of the market.
The European Commission seems to back up the supermarkets' claim that food waste is not their fault. The Commission estimates that supermarkets only directly waste 5% of food, while consumers waste 42% and producers 39%. In fact, we do not know how much the supermarkets waste because they refuse to release the figures. The charity Oxfam has slammed food supermarkets' lack of transparency. Only Sainsbury's admits to wasting some 44,000 tonnes of food every year. But this is only part of the story. Closer analysis shows that supermarkets have developed ways to distribute what could become their food waste, such as excess stock, to other parts of the supply chain.
One of the great ironies of supermarkets is that they're built on a very narrow definition of efficiency. Efficiency for the big supermarkets today is about driving costs down. But whenever you drive costs down, it usually drives them up for someone else. So what's cheap for the supermarket, what maximises their profits, is a cost for others.
This creates the impression that producers and consumers are more at fault. First of all, the very location of many supermarkets on the edge of town encourages consumers to buy more than they can consume. If you drive some distance and have a car boot to fill, perhaps on a fortnightly or monthly shop, the tendency is to purchase more than you need. And these groceries may well go off before you consume them. Secondly, discounted groceries and buy one get one free offers give the illusion of savings that may well simply end up as waste.
All supermarkets will have special offers on weekly, like the buy one, get one free, for instance, which everybody knows. But you have no say in how much of that stock will come into your shop. So you may get the same amount as a big store. And generally, you end up with quite a lot left over at the end of the promotion. So again, wastage. Or you've got a stock room full of things that are slowly going out of date.
Then the sell-by date is not as simple as it might first appear. Few customers notice the difference between best before and the sell-by date,
They get rid of it on its sell-by date, but usually fresh foods will have 3 days on it, so the use-by date is usually later than the sell-by date. So you can still use it for 3 days. And I think this is an issue with people at home as well. They tend to throw the food away because it's reached the sell-by date, but you still get two or three days on the use-by date.
Nearly two-thirds of customers didn't know the difference, according to a House of Lords report. Food is perfectly edible after its best before date, but much of it immediately ends up in the bin. And the dates themselves are usually chosen as early as possible by retailers keen to avoid legal action.
Now, ironically, in the face of their economic efficiency, their narrowly defined economic efficiency, it also generates a huge amount of other kinds of waste. So when they push the 3 for 2 or 2 for 1 offers, the, you know, buy one, get one free models, it ends up with the equivalent of about 1/3 of what you buy going into waste and landfill.
Some 10% of the £10 billion worth of food thrown away is for this reason, even though it's good enough to eat. Sell-by dates are even shorter on imported food. Locally produced food would cost the supermarkets more, but its shelf life would be longer and better value for consumers.
The supermarkets are not buying from local produce. They are basically importing food. Most of the time they are importing food at a great expense of the environment because they have to, the transport is sometimes they are bringing apples, for example, from New Zealand when they could find the apples here in the UK. But of course they are creating this, in New Zealand they will find cheaper apples than they find here. So that this is increasing the transport costs, paying peanuts to people in other countries to be able to access those food here.
Then there's the end of the day waste that could be given away or given to charity. Some retailers pour bleach or blue dye on their products, while others slap a not for human consumption sticker on the food they discard.
Food getting chucked out, sometimes bleach is thrown on it, it's kept well away from people, you get criminal record if you try and take that food, and it's actually, they should be getting a criminal record for throwing that food away. It's a criminal thing, the amount of waste that gets, of good food that's chucked away.
Over half of food waste is generated in this way and could be saved. But the market power that supermarkets use to push waste onto the consumer pales into insignificance in comparison to the way they treat farmers. Supermarkets have huge buying power. Even large farmers are small in comparison.
The supermarkets collaboratively together are the biggest buyers of all the milk in the country, so they can just control the price between them.
Supermarkets have a 75-80% share of farmers' produce. Supermarket contracts can make or break food producers, both in this country and abroad.
They want to know all of the business accounts of the farm, exactly what it costs him to employ people, exactly what he's paying himself, exactly what his feed costs are. And they use a system to monitor all those costs against what it's basically to work out what it costs that farmer to make his milk. And when they pool all that information together from a group of farmers supplying one supermarket, they've got a very strong tool to then be able to work out what it's costing their supplier to make that milk and then just pay that little bit more than the cost of production just to produce it. Now that isn't fair trade, that's fixing. That's saying, well, that's what it costs you to make it, so that's what I'm having it at.
But supermarket contracts with farmers lead to huge levels of waste. Take, for instance, the issue of so-called ugly fruit and veg. Experts calculate that the supermarket's obsession with presenting us with fruit and veg that looks good leads to some 30% of a farmer's crop being rejected by retailers.
They'll also have very particular aesthetic criteria for the produce that they get, which means that even if the food is perfectly good and nutritious, but doesn't match the precise millimetre length that they want for a French bean or whatever, you could end up with vast amounts being wasted.
The misshapen produce is either left in the field to rot, sold off to be added to manufactured products such as soup, used in animal feed, or put into composting. Another 20% is wasted because farmers overproduced in order to ensure that they don't miss the strict production targets stipulated in their contracts with supermarkets. So the combined waste created by the supermarket's desire for perfect-looking products and by the use of strict production contracts can lead to as much as 50% of the producer's crop going to waste even before it gets off the farm.
All the food products we use has been rejected, either for cosmetic reasons, the banana's straight, the carrot's got a bend, the wrong colour, the apple too big, apple too small. And we take all this food and we cook it straight away and we reuse it back.
And as if this were not bad enough, supermarkets can cancel contracts with farmers at the last moment, leaving them with an entirely unsold crop, which often goes to waste.
One of the things that supermarkets do, of course, is they like to keep their options open. They know, broadly speaking, the kind of offers and produce that they want to put in front of shoppers, but they also want to have flexibility. Now, that means very often that they'll have suppliers caught up in exclusive contracts, which means that if they change their mind, those suppliers are left high and dry with nowhere else to go.
A House of Lords report on food waste highlighted the issue. It said, "It is clear that actions by retailers, such as the cancellation of orders of food that have already been grown, lead to food waste earlier in the supply chain. Yet again, waste caused by supermarkets is made to appear as if it's someone else's fault." Retail supermarkets are a classic case of what economists call oligopoly, meaning that a few giant firms are competing with each other for the same market.
Supermarkets play a key role within the global food system that has taken over resources from people and has been destroying the planet. There's no an issue about individual responsibility from consumers. It's a big responsibility on the corporations that run this planet. This is the capital concentration in this planet. It has been in the few hands of corporations like Monsanto, Cargill, Tesco, Walmart, which is Asda for here in the UK. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about how few corporations are deciding the future of people, the livelihoods of people, what we eat, how do you consume, where do you go. And the supermarkets by itself, there was a creation of a corporation. They were created with a specific purpose of controlling psychologically people, how you buy, where you, the whole setting of a supermarket, the aisles, how they change. It's a psychologically programmed, so you go and buy what they want.
This is what produces a race to the bottom in terms of forcing ever lower costs and ever more demanding contracts onto food producers.
What we're seeing is uncertainty, and really it's a way that the global players are kind of threatening to move away from some of the farms in the developing world. So they're saying, well, at any moment we can move and start buying from Ethiopia if you don't give it to us at this price. And they go to Ethiopia and then they will say, well, we might move to Kenya if you don't give it at this price and under these conditions. So we're seeing a global race to the bottom happening in terms and conditions.
Tesco's were the first ones to announce a price war on milk. They announced that they were going to slash the price of milk on the supermarket shelf and basically started a price war between all the supermarkets. And that would... So initially I was using Twitter to say, well, you know, how can you ethically do that to the dairy industry and just suddenly collapse our price overnight? And so we're not going to, because we still pay our farmers the same price and it's one of the highest prices, or is the highest price, which it potentially was for those 700 or 800 farmers that received that price. They were still getting the price that they were contracted into. It has now dropped 3 or 4 pence, but the whole market's dropped by that. Well, that's because the biggest supermarket dropped the price of milk, causing a price war, so the whole industry went into turmoil. The downward spiral started, and 6 months later they got their price down as well. So their farmers aren't now getting the price that they promised them earlier in the year. They're getting less, and all of us are getting loads less because everybody went into turmoil. If Tesco's are going to do whatever it is, 4 pints for £1 or whatever it was, headlines were going to be, you're like, your next supermarket says, oh, we'll do it for 95p, the next one does it for 94p, and then you get to the point where you've some of the real discounters saying, oh, we'll do 4 pints of milk for 80 pence or whatever it is that they've come out with.
But of course, no one supermarket chain can be sure they will maintain their market share. They may be, and often are, ordering too much. They then cancel contracts, reject the food produced because of its look, or sell off stock in discounted packages and buy one, get one free offers. as one study concludes, the most significant source of waste is overproduction, which means producing more, sooner or faster than is required by the next process. In a study of global retailers, Oxfam concluded the hundreds of brands lining supermarket shelves are predominantly owned by just 10 huge companies, and they have a combined revenue of more than $1 billion a day, whilst 1 in 8 people go to bed hungry every night. And as the recession has hit home since the banking crash of 2008, the supermarkets have been the last to feel the pinch. The UK economy as a whole is only now recovering to the point where it was before the crash of 2008. Real wages have undergone their longest, steepest decline since World War II. But every year of the recession has seen supermarkets grow by 2.5%. That will leave the supermarkets raking in a massive £164 billion. According to one industry report, given that large supermarkets can buy cheaply and sell low at the margins, this means that supermarkets can actually benefit from poor economic conditions like those that have been prevalent for over much of the last 5 years.
But even today, we're still reliant upon a model which squeezes the local economies and the local communities of the global south, of the developing world, to provide cheap produce for British supermarket shelves, in which you're not paying the full environmental cost or the full social cost of production.
This is because they sell the necessities that most people cannot afford not to buy. The biggest change that the worst post-war slump has produced in the world of supermarkets is that the really low-cost supermarkets, like Aldi and Lidl, have taken a bite out of the market share of the Big Four. In the middle of the recession, Aldi saw a 450% surge in profits. That was an increase from £18.7 million to £103 million in just 12 months. The people who pay for these profits are not just cash-strapped consumers in general, they are also poorly paid supermarket workers. The Fair Pay Network has slammed the Big Four supermarkets for paying poverty wages. Their report estimates that supermarket workers are paid just £6.83 an hour and that only 1 in 7 receives a living wage.
Compared to the big bosses, what the people on the shop floor do, the money is very, very poor. Most people started on minimum wage, and a lot of the companies now are giving you 0 hours, so you will be on a, if they need you, they will use you. So there's not even any security in your job in that way anymore. You used to have a contract, you knew what days you worked, but now they expect everybody to be totally flexible without a contract, which is not easy for people if you have family or commitments. So, and when you see bonuses of £6 million going to directors and you can't even have your £20 Christmas bonus, which used to buy the turkey, that's all gone, it makes you feel a little bit, where's the fairness here?
The Greater London Authority has calculated that a London wage earner who earns less than about £7.25 an hour will be living in poverty even after benefits and tax credits are taken into account. And then there are the even worse paid agricultural workers. In the UK, average agricultural wages are barely above the national minimum wage, meaning that many agricultural workers will be earning well below the minimum. For food sourced from abroad, the picture is worse still. The charity War on Want has revealed that workers in the tea industry in Kenya, supplying UK supermarkets, earn as little as 7 pence an hour. Others on poverty pay include workers on farms in South Africa, supplying wine and fruit to UK supermarkets, as well as flour workers in Colombia and Kenya.
The conditions for farmers in Britain parallel often the conditions for farmers in developing countries, where they've got less and less bargaining power. And that lower amount of bargaining power is meaning that more risks are being pushed down onto farmers, both here and abroad, and a lot more of the value is being captured by supermarkets, by manufacturers and processors in that supply chain, the big global players. We're seeing poor wages. We're seeing land rights abuses sometimes in supply chain where people are forced off the land because they don't have the right documentation. We're seeing overuse of water in some regions where people aren't able to access enough water for their daily use or to grow food for themselves because the water is being used for farms that are supplying global supply chains. So it's a mixed impact, and it's very difficult to provide the net impact. But what we definitely know is that supermarkets have enormous power. When they want to invest and put money into making sure that conditions are fair and that farming is sustainable in the developing world, that they can make this happen. But it means that they're going to have to tackle the really tough issues, which includes how much of the pie that they're getting. Because if they want to keep getting more and more of the slice of the pie in terms of value, in terms of profits, then those costs are going to be incurred by people that don't have the power to fight back. And that's going to often mean that people are living in poverty and people are stuck in poverty who are producing the very agricultural goods that are going on our shelves.
Supermarkets are huge corporations supplying the necessities of life to millions of people. They make huge profits, pay poverty wages, and are responsible for enormous levels of waste. If a cartoon villain designed a machine like this, we would scarcely believe it. But here it is, on every high street in the country, a device which exploits the very people who produce its wealth, be they workers in the stores or people who work the land here and abroad. Worse still, it forces them to plough under or otherwise destroy millions of tons of perfectly edible food.
There is no doubt that when these kind of whimsical criteria to do with what the supermarket wants to sell, when it wants to sell it, what it wants to look like, that when those things are applied, there's no doubt that it results in absolutely mountains of waste of perfectly good food, which could be a dinner for someone and would be a livelihood for the person who produced it.
And all this in a country where millions can barely afford to feed themselves adequately or healthily. In 2012, a study found one in five mothers would regularly miss out on meals so as to be able to ensure that their children weren't hungry. According to a March 2013 report, teachers in London schools said that at least five children per class turned out without having breakfast, with 41% of teachers saying they believed the children's hunger led to symptoms such as fainting. In 2012, some 200,000 Britons needed provisions from food banks, about double the number from 2011.
A lot of people that are on low wages actually do rely on food banks themselves, or some sort of, you know, looking for a bargain at the end of the day in the supermarket to buy their food, you know, get the reduced prices if they can, what they call like the reductions at the end. It doesn't seem like the money is fairly distributed. And when you think the work that the shop floor staff do, and I know a lot of people think that shop staff don't work hard, but they do. They do.
This is one monument to austerity Britain. A monument that stands in every town centre the length and breadth of the land. On one corner of the street, the giant supermarket chain, paying low wages and destroying food at every point from farm to fridge. On the opposite corner of the street, the food bank, perhaps helping the very people who produce the profits for the shareholders of the supermarkets with enough food for them to make it through another week.